Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney to Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, we are having such a wonderful time, you know, dealing with this mess. Defund. Yes, defund the police, especially here in Benton Harbor. Benton Township Police need to be defunded. And when I say defunded, I mean exactly that. We have to start using the money, sending it out to agencies out in the community. Stop them from shooting rubber bullets. Stop them from using gas. Stop them from using tanks. Stop them completely. Defund the police. We are in a crisis here in the city of Benton Harbor. They had a protest here. And what they did, they invited some of the most racist people in the nation. If anybody have ever been to St. Joe or St. Joseph, Michigan, where the courthouse is, infiltrated the march, paid money to participate, including State Representative Fred Upton. He is the heir to Whirlpool Corporation. He's about to lose this United States representative. So I want everybody to get out and vote against Fred Upton. If you need a ride, contact me. I will take you, even in St. Joseph, Michigan, to vote. But here's what happened. They had a protest here. It was supposed to be Black Lives Matter, which I really don't like that phrase that much now, but it's a slogan. I like it. A slogan where we can say Black Lives Matter, but I like the title Black Power more. And the reason is that you get rid of the pretenders with saying the word Black Power mean, you know. But anyway, they had a protest here in Benton Harbor, Michigan. They marched from St. Joseph. And everybody that was a racist that lived in St. Joe attended the march. You had Fred Upton. You had the St. Joe mayor. You had the St. Joe pro tem. You had the St. Joe commissioners. You had the Barron County commissioners, all white. You had Michael Sepik. And somebody even said that you had Judge Dennis Wiley, who is the head of the KKK in this area, I believe. And they said that it was all these people marching, knowing, just to get a photo app, just to say that they're not racist. Well, the word is not just, I'm not racist, I got a black friend. The word, the correct term is, you got to be anti-racist. That's right. And remember this, they can always find a black person. They can always find a black person to sell out and allow them to march. They would never, ever have marched in one of my marches. Never. Matter of fact, I wouldn't even want them on the sideline. But unfortunately, money was distributed, and these people allow these people to come and take over the march. So it really wasn't a march. It was a walk-a-thon. That's all it was. It was a walk-a-thon. That's it. That's all it was. People out here walking and doing some of the stuff that you would never believe. That's right. It was what you call a walk of God. I never seen anything like it in my life. A walkabout. And they had the nerves to give these people an award for protest. I don't know what kind of protest it was. I can't even say it was a protest for George Floyd. I can't say that. I can't say it was a protest for police brutality. I can't say that. I can't say it was a protest protesting the killing of black folks. I cannot say that. I can't say it. There's no way in this world. These are the people that created this. These are the people that created this mess. And here you are, here they are marching so they can say that they're not a racist. That's all it was. Check me out. Here's a picture of me marching. See the sign that says Black Lives Matter. And you go to court the next day, they give you life for a popsicle. Claim you stole a popsicle. Claim you did anything. Plant drugs on you. They had one cop that planted drugs on over 300 people. 300. These are these people. This is their history. And this is what they've been doing for the last 30, 40, 50 years. The same thing. So now they want to get out and march so they can have a photo app and say they are no longer racist. We are not racist anymore. See us, we're marching. And they were. They was out there. And they was taking selfies. They were taking all kind of pictures. They was getting fast. And the people who they paid to organize this, the city of St. Joe gave them an award. And the award was for allowing them to participate and get a photo app. Even the newspaper, which we know, well, you may not know who the Herald Plain newspaper is. It's not a newspaper for Benton Harbor community, Benton Township community. It's a newspaper for St. Joe. They was there. They had to make sure that they was all there. The media was there, you know, asking, and they interviewed mostly all the white people that was marching, more than, you know, the few blacks that was there. So they started dancing, start singing, and they really believed that live in the city of Benton Harbor. They paid them. They paid the, you know, they got a few dollars. But you can't be saying I'm not racist. You got to be anti-racist. Those are the correct words. And don't go around telling me my best friend is black and all this kind of stuff. I don't want to hear that mess. It's either you is or you ain't. There's no in between. There's no such thing. But here's the good news. I think now the eyes of the world is beginning to open up. They begin to see things that maybe you can't see. They're beginning to see things now where every single person in this country can take a stand and learn to fight back. That's right. That's what it's all about. Black folks, white folks, Mexicans, we all in this together. And the good news is we can win. On that note, I want to talk about my friend Kim Thompson, Thomas, my next guest. Just a, a wonderful person. I want you to listen to her story. I know you people out there, you know, I've been getting some really sensational emails. And I want to thank all my listeners last week. You broke the record for viewers, and I'm happy for that. We'd like to keep it over 100,000 people listening. I'm going to hit that plateau 200,000 before the month out for one Sunday. That's what I'm looking for, and I think we can do it. But on that note, I like to talk about my TI family. They're target individual people being targeted by the government. And the things that they do, you know, and what they go through, most people don't understand. They say, oh, the government would never do this to you. Every single person in this world or in here in these United States are expendable. They don't care nothing about you. They don't care nothing about me. They don't care nothing about none of us. But my point is, we have to care about each other. And if we do that, we can defeat this. We can stop this. We can make them do the things that they've never done before. You know the story of when the United States of America was fighting the Iraqi soldiers. When they was fighting, it was just over 150 of them guys fighting against 1,500 of the best fighting men in Iraq. And the Iraq army surrendered to 150 United States soldiers. Never could have happened. They used the weapon, microwave. It was done with electronics. On that note, I want to bring in my good friend Tim Thomas. Tim Thomas, are you there? Talk to me.
Yes, I am, Reverend Pickney. Thank you, first of all, for extending the invitation for me to come and share with people and bring more awareness to the reality of, you know, what's not being talked in the news media. And I pray God continue to bless you and enlarge your territory, because he's using your platform to possibly to get this to stop. And those who are behind this, that his justice will be done for them to be served justice, you know. So first of all, I'd like to share with you my area. Years ago, I used to go to the state capitol and pray with the government people, whether they're the state representative or my senator, pray with them, present them Bibles, things like that. And so I would notice years later, one day I was at my daughter's house, and she lives in a multicultural community, and just so happened she was the only black on that block, and there was a black guy across the street. He told me, I would be over there babysitting, he told me that he would see some white guy walking, roaming through her backyard, and he checked him. He said, hey, man, what you doing here, you know? And he said, but the guy never answered him. But I would see this white lady in a white SUV sitting in front of her house all the time, and it was very suspicious to me. At first, I thought she was just monitoring someone down the street. But I noticed when I would leave her house to go pick up my grandkids from school, the lady would follow me. And when I come back, she would reappear in front of the house. So this is kind of strange. Okay, I don't understand it. So in all this, I would notice that I also connected with my mayor in Sterling Heights, Michigan, and I would pray with him. You know, he and I exchanged number, and I would always, you know, let him know, hey, I'm praying with you. And he would listen to my godly counsel, and he saw the fruits of what I had shared with him in regards to, you know, Chrysler plant was going to be leaving the community. And he said, Kim, if that happened, it's going to affect all the mom and pop stores. And so I say, Lil Mayor Naughty, if you end up praying, God going to hear your prayer. And he did it. And it was announced in the newspaper in Sterling Heights that he said, out of his own mouth, I got on my knees and prayed to the big man upstairs, and he heard my prayers. So everybody know, you know, in Michigan, they know that plant is still there. Not only is it there, they hired additional 900 people at a paint plant in that area. So with that said, so I would always connect with him at different, town hall meetings. You know, I say, Mayor Naughty, what you need me to pray about? And he would tell me about the police officers and the fire department. You know, he say the budget is going, you know, kind of low, and I don't want to have to lay them off. And I would see different officers in Dunkin' Donuts, the dollar store parking lot, you know, Coney Island. You know, I say, hey, officer, you know, my name is Ken Thomas. I would like to pray with you. What is in our prayer to pray with you about? And they will open up and share with me. It was always different things about family issues. And I understand it because I have a family. And so that went on for like the last several years. However, the last year and a half, I've been noticing that, you know, I'm being followed and I don't understand why. Someone was saying that, you know, maybe because, you know, I'm connected with government people. I'm not connected with them. I don't never work for government people. I've always been in the automotive industry, you know, for 25 plus years. I don't work there now, but my background, the Lord gave me a grace and a favor to pray with them, pray for them, because the Bible do say pray for all the kings and leaders and those that are in authority that we will live a quiet and peaceful life, but that they will come into the saving knowledge of knowing Jesus Christ as Lord. So, yes, I do and honor what God's word said. And so a lot of them, they end up, you know, thanking me, and I presented them Bibles, and they get, you know, they tell me about, you know, things getting better, things like that. So one particular time, this was like a year ago, I was laying down in my bed, and I got woke up out of my bed like 6:30 in the morning with this sharp stabbing pain. I mean, I can't even just, like somebody put a knife on some fire and stabbed it in the side of my temple. And I woke up and grabbed the side of my head, and I didn't know what it was. And because you can't, I didn't hear a window bust, I didn't see nothing. And so I noticed it was real red and stuff, so I called the police station. And when I called the police station, the police that happened to show up, he said, hey, I remember you. He said, you used to come over there and pray with us. And he told me, he said, but it was a weapon. I said, I don't know what it was. He said, yeah, you look like you got hit with what they call a radiation gun. And I'm like, what is that? You know? And I said, what? You know, that's how I was looking. He said, I want you to go to the hospital. But I was like, no, I'm not going to go to the hospital. Like, am I about to black out? You know, I didn't know. You know, I didn't know what was going on. And so as a result of it, I said, no, I'm not going to go. He said, yeah, but he said, this is what I want you to do. He said, I want you to get a lava lamp. And he said, you put the lava lamp in here, it's going to like break down the frequency of it. So I was like, wow, this is crazy. But what I noticed during this time, someone had hacked into my cell phone, and I went up to Best Buy, and I happened to run into a young man. He was about 26 years old in the security department. And I said, I'm looking for a camera. He said, man, what are you looking for? So I told him what happened. So he said, I used to be a private investigator. I used to work with four judges and attorneys for a living. He said, what I want you to do is go home and look around the bottom of your walls around your house. If you see a little hole that looked like it was patched about the size of a nickel or dime, he said, give me a call. I'll come to your house. So he came, I said, what is this? So I got home and noticed, and it was there. It's in my dining room. And he said, what they did, they drilled a hole in your wall, and they allowed some like a ping thing, like to connect to some modem to have access to do this type of weapon against you. I was shaking so bad. So when he came to the house, he put his device on. He said, I don't do this for a living no more, he said, because, you know, I got out of that business, but I still had the device. So he started walking around the house, and he said, your neighbor next door has some type of high-grade Wi-Fi signal. He said, it's a commercial grade that's giving signals to the rest of your neighbors. This is what he told me. And I was like, you know, this was like a mystery to me because I ain't never heard, and I don't look at some sci-fi 007 movie, so this was something like that. So then he started walking around, and he said, wow, your house got a lot of hidden devices in it. He said, so give me your cell phone, because I told him how I found 7 files left in my Apple phone. You know how you pick up your cell phone and look at it? Just so happened, it wasn't my natural picture on the screen. It was like all these files that say Wi-Fi something, and I got a chance to collect all 8 or 9 of them, right? So he came over, and he said, I'm going to go through the back door of your cell phone. And he was able to track a lot of more stuff. So he said, yeah, you need to, you know, call the police. And then I called Apple. Apple asked me, could you take it to the legal department? And the lady said on the phone, she said, I need to ask you something. You think your neighbors are doing this to you? Now, mind you, he said, he came up with the device, and he said that. Now, I'm talking to the Apple, you know, customer service, and I said, why would, and I said, okay, now, I don't know. But then check this out. So the time started going on. I say a month later, I'm waking up with another big radiation burn on the side of my other temple. I called the police again. This time I went up to the police station, and I told them about the mark. I wrote down my evidence, told them about the files that I had gathered out my phone. And one of the files specifically state a microwave a conversation, something about microwave. You know, I don't understand all this terminology of computer, but it does mention microwave. Mm. And so I was like, what? You know, so I didn't know. Now, the police officer is the one that told me all this. So I asked, when I went to the police station, I asked the lady, I said, excuse me, ma'am. I said, officer, I would like to make a police report, and here's my report right here. I said, here's my evidence. Would you like to see it? And she said, no, that's not necessary. And I'm thinking like, oh, my God, this is very necessary. But, you know, I said, I need to ask you, are my name on some kind of watch list or something? She said, if it was, I'm not going to tell you. I was like, okay. And I left out the police station. And then as time went on, this was all in the time span of over a year. So I kept getting hit again. And I said, this is not right, Lord, this is not right. So I just been praying and praying and praying. And eventually the Lord just started helping me, like, be more relaxed. And I end up finding on YouTube a lady named Ella in regards to, she talked to other TIs, and I started getting more educated. When I got more knowledge about it, I started being on a search. I became my own detective, okay? So in all this, I end up like, okay, the private investigator, he said, yes, it's some hidden devices around, things like that. So I went to the spy shop in Southfield. I talked to the camera guy, and, you know, and he told me about the device. So a brother in the Lord came over and brought me the device. And, I mean, I started scanning stuff, and you wouldn't believe some of the hidden devices that are in my house. This thing is so awful that it's in my walls. They shot smart dust, which is a nanotechnology. It's the size of a grain of salt. And when I scan, you turn on your Bluetooth, you push scan. And when you scan it, a computer IP number comes up. So with all that said, I end up calling another police officer. Another guy, a police officer, came like a couple weeks ago. During this whole year and a half, I only made like four or five police reports, okay? Mm-hmm. So the police officer that left the house 2 weeks ago, he asked me, he said, ma'am, I need to ask you something. He said, do you work for the government? And I said, no, officer, I don't. He said, what did you do? I said, you know what I used to do? I used to pray for government people. You know, I was sent over to, you know, Israel and pray with, you know, godly leaders over there. You know, I prayed. That's what God gave me, to pray for them, because they do need prayer, as we can see what's going on now. So this last incident, when my friend Sabrina come over, we were going to go to the park, you know, so she's going to help me, you know, kind of, you know, get my mind more relaxed and come on, Kim, let's enjoy ourselves. We decide to stop and get some ice cream. But I said, I need to show you something, Sabrina, because no one won't believe it. So I brought her up the stairs in the bedroom, and I began to scan my wall, scan my floor, scan the dust. Okay, my sleep apnea machine, I scanned my mattress, and it says a hidden device. The thing started vibrating, said a hidden device. And I put my arm up under the mattress, and I said, okay, it's no device. But when I scanned it with my Bluetooth, their computer IP numbers came up and the types of device that they were. So, and they're different numbers. So it's a lot of them, and my house is like right up after like a little main street or whatever. So they over there in the 7-Eleven parking lot monitoring me, and they got cameras throughout my house and speakers. So when this police officer, this last Father's Day, I called. I say, I'm about to call the police, Sabrina, because he needed to come up here and see this, you know. And I wanted to show him that why am I having computer IP numbers on my mattress, on my floor, and these are all different numbers. You know, I would say like five or six different computer IP numbers. And on one side of the mattress, it said a hidden device. But what I found out is the hidden device, they shot the nanotechnology. That's how that they control it from the laptop computer, and it's able to hit and hit you, you know, and you hear them, you feel them sharp stabbing pain. Okay, another time, before I finish this about the officer, let me switch back to this one. So I kept feeling like I need my ears cleaned because it hadn't been cleaned over, like, 30 years. So the ear doctor said, come in. But when I get in, because I figured out I can't even put a Q-tip in my left ear drum. It won't go in. And I say, something not right. So he looked in there. He said, no, you don't need your ear clean. I say, doctor, you said if I hadn't had to clean over 30 years that I should clean it. But after he looked in there, whoever it is that's monitoring me must have cued him in, don't clean her ear out. So then I waited a month later. I waited a month later and went to another ear doctor. I called first, and I say, ma'am, you know, my ear hasn't been cleaned out in over 30 years. Can, you know, do I need it? She said, oh, yeah, you need it. You know, yeah, you should get it cleaned. So I showed up, and I sat in her chair. She started looking, and she said, oh, no, you don't need your ear cleaned. And I said, ma'am, could you please just stick the camera in my ear for my own, you know, so I can feel secure about my ear is okay. And there's a camera on the wall, and she said, no, you know, you don't need your ear clean. She said, okay, I'll put the camera in. She only put it at the tip that you can only see with looking in a mirror. So I said, she said, if you don't believe me, go get you an oscilloscope off Amazon. I was like, okay. I immediately went home, ordered the oscilloscope. When the oscilloscope came, it's a little camera that's the size of a Q-tip that you connect with your cell phone, and you download the app according to if you have Apple or Android, and it allows you to see what's in your ear. But when I sat on the bed with it and connected, I heard the Lord say, put it in your nasal passage on your left nostrils, and I found out I have illegal microchip implant in my nasal passage. So then I understood this is why they was avoiding my ear. And my nose kept bleeding. I would send pictures to my friend Sabrina, who's also on the phone. I said, Sabrina, my left nostril keep bleeding. Something not right. Something not right. Then that's when I discovered the implant. So let me take you back to the officer. So when I called the officer because I discovered something else, and I wanted him to see the scans on the wall and the floor, and I found this dust. You know, I have it in my purse right now, And when he walks, I said, hey, officer, come on in. He said, no, I'm not coming in. Come on the porch. And I said, come on the porch. Now, every police officer that came to my house politely came in. And he said, what's going on with you? So I said, you see this mark behind my neck right here? You know, this is a radiation burn. You see this on my leg? And he would just look, I mean, very callous. And he was listening to me. And I say, well, do you know who William Benny is? You know, he worked this program. And I said, okay, so let me ask you. He said, no, I don't know him. I said, well, you know Officer Kashad? I said, yes, I got hit with a weapon a year ago. And Officer Kashad of Sterling Heights told me that it was a laser radiation gun that came through my walls. I said, he told me he used to be an officer over in Southwest Detroit. And he said it happens over there, but he was surprised it happened over here. So he couldn't respond behind that because he's one of their own. Okay? And that's how I found out. So when he said, okay, he walked in the house. And he saw my friend Sabrina, who's on the line. And I said, hi, this is my friend Sabrina. And Sabrina, so tell him what he said to you after I introduced you. Hello, Sabrina?
Hold on for 1 second.
Okay.
Sabrina, talk to me.
Hello, Reverend Pinckney. First of all, thank you so much for giving us a voice today. We just so love and appreciate you. We bless your ministry in Jesus' name. So getting back to what happened with Kim, so basically what I noticed was I had a very bad feeling before Kim was going to call him. Something in my spirit just didn't feel right. But as soon as we saw the officer, number one, he didn't come inside, and he looked very suspicious, like he was just like, oh, yeah. Like he was just acting very suspicious. So finally, he ends up coming inside, and he was asking, you know, Kim was trying to show him what was going on, and he was just like nodding his head, like he didn't even want to hear what she had to say. And at one point, she wanted to take him upstairs.
Do you think he may have been afraid? You think he may have been afraid more than anything else?
I think he was really afraid. He looked like he was just intimidated. And then, you know, he started asking me, like, what are you doing here? I said, well, I'm here visiting. I'm her friend. He goes, and then, you know, when she wanted him to come upstairs, he started asking me, like, you know, do you believe what she is saying? Do you believe her? How long have you known Kim? I said, I've known her for a long time. And do you believe her? I said, yes, I believe everything that she's telling me, because she's been, you know, I know she's been targeted, and I've been hearing her, you know, everything that they've been doing to her. And this policeman, just very suspicious, he was very cold and callous. And he didn't want to hear what we had to say. It's like he had already made up his mind. And I was like, you know what, we need to go. And on our way out, he came up to our car. He says, oh, you know what, I'm worried about you. Are you schizophrenic? And he was questioning Kim. Are you schizophrenic? Are you on medicine? Because I'm worried about you. And it was just like, it was so, like just absolutely, you know, surprising the way that he responded. It was almost as if he came with preconceived notions. Maybe somebody had spoken to him. We weren't even sure what the situation was, but it was like he had already made up his mind about Kim, you know. And I know that.
And let me say,
also,
Kim,
I'm sorry.
Before you go in, you know you're not supposed to step outside your apartment when you call the police, because that's when they can arrest you. They can't arrest you inside your apartment, but once you step out, they can do that. So be aware of these people and how they operate than anything else.
Wow.
You see, that's why they always tell you to step outside your door.
Mm-hmm.
When they tell you to step outside your door, now they can arrest you. And claim that you're nuts, or you are you made a false police report, and this is what they do. Never, ever, ever, if you call the police, step outside your front door. That's a no-no.
Okay.
And that's how you have to deal with them. Now, let me say this, too.
I see.
Now, we're talking about this non-touch attack that's going on with Kim and everything. Think about this for a second. See, it's more important to tell people about it, because it's over a million people that is classified as target individuals just in this country. I'm talking, I can't even tell you around the world, but it's happening around the world too. But what we have to do is we have to teach so they can understand what this mess is, because this is serious. And I always think about this. Don't go by saying that the government would never do this. They will do anything.
Right.
Every single person is accessible. So, Kim, go ahead, finish your story. You got 5 good minutes, so go ahead, take care of your business.
Okay, so with that said, I scanned the ceiling, and it showed it's a hidden device, and you can see there's a lump on my ceiling. So he was like, oh, that's just a nail pop. Then he said like that, Sabrina. So then we goes into the kitchen, and I say, Sabrina, by this time I was very frightened, literally scared of him. So I said, Sabrina, can you come in the kitchen with us? Because I felt like when we turned the wall, I didn't know what he was thinking about. But he said, no, you sit right there. Don't you get up. That's what he told her. And I was like. And then he said to me, he said, what's your husband's name? First of all, I didn't even tell you if I got a husband. How did you know? And I said, I'm not giving you his number. And he said, what's his work number? So I gave him the number. He said, you stay right here. I don't go nowhere. You stay right here. He goes out to the car, and Sabrina said, Kim, I don't feel right. Something not right about him. Let's go. So I said, yes. I never felt like I had to run away from my house. So I grabbed all my, you know, like my purse or whatever, and I said, come on, Sabrina, let me put the security lock on, you know, and I'm going to go meet you at the car. Well, when I walked out, he saw me leaving out the door. He said, wait a minute. I said, no, officer, I don't want to make a report. That's okay. Forget it. So we get in the car. He says something to Sabrina on the driver's side, and he comes around on the passenger side. He said, are you schizophrenia? And I was like, no, I'm not schizophrenic. He said, are you on medicine? I'm not. But this is the kicker. I'm known in the city of Sterling Heights with so many different police officers to pray for them. I'm known to pray with my senator in Sterling Heights, pray with my state representative and presented in Bible, pray with my mayor, and the Lord answered his prayer. And then this particular officer shows up and label me as being, ask them what they think about me as if I'm schizophrenia. So, and then I thought, okay, he must be talking to the neighbors because he don't know me. I never met him before in that community. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of nice police officers that I met in Sterling Heights. But what Sabrina and I noticed is when we pulled off, he drove right down the street to the neighbor's house, didn't he, Sabrina?
Yes, he did.
So he must have been talking to him. So they, you know, like, are they a part of it?
Wow. Yeah, it just seems like it just seemed very suspicious to us, the way that this whole thing happened, you know, and what these targeted individuals go through.
Kim and Sabrina, you got to know, this is how they do. They demonize you with your neighbors. You see, that's how, and your family. And don't forget about your family. They demonize you with your family, saying you nuts and schizophrenic and everything else. See, once they get you alone, then they can do what they want with you because you have no protection. And that's why this show is so important, because I want to bring out all of this. I want these people to know, and they don't intimidate me. Let's put it that way. They don't scare me, you see. But our job is to make sure we educate the people. If we don't do nothing else, we got to tell them, because people need to know about these things. This thing is happening.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, it is happening. And I want people to know that this is for real. This is no joke. This is the real deal. They can call you crazy, schizophrenic, or whatever they want. But in reality, what you're doing, you're telling the truth and educating the people. And what they do with that information is on them. I would, you know, once I tell people something, what they do with the information, I don't really care. Because I'm going to tell you the truth and deal with the truth. And I'm going to make sure that we help each other. There's strength in numbers. Always remember that. There's strength in numbers. Yes. And don't be afraid to tell people stuff. Once you tell them, if they say you're nuts, hey, keep moving. That's okay. Well, that's how you feel about me. I'm a little crazy, okay? All right, we'll talk to you some other time. That's how you deal with them. Don't get all and try to convince people who you can't convince. You can't convince everybody. And everybody is not going to like you. I don't care who you are. So make sure that you do what you're supposed to do. Your job is to educate the people, tell people about this stuff, and then keep moving. Because and never, ever, ever, when you call the police, step out of your apartment door. Don't ever do that. Because then they can arrest you. And they will do that.
Thank you for telling me.
Okay, go ahead. You got 2 more minutes to tell us what you want them to tell us. And from there, I got to move on to some of my other guests. I got to bring in Denise Johnson, my good friend from San Jose. Well, she's from California. So I got to bring her in. But you got 2 minutes, and I won't interrupt you. That's a promise. Go ahead.
Okay. So what I wanted to inform everyone who's being attacked, what the Lord gave me was everybody kept saying, keep your Bluetooth off. They're tracking you through your Bluetooth. So one day I'm riding down the street, and the Lord said, daughter, turn your Bluetooth on. So when I turned it on, I found out that there are numerous people up in my community who have their device connected to mine illegally. And so what it is you can give that information to a digital forensic person, and they will be able to find out who that is. That is that's against the law. You know, that's cybercrime, you know. And so, and as you going down the street, I feel, you know, I'm getting hit with that weapon, and I just turn my Bluetooth, and you keep tapping that button called scan, and it's going to constantly be picking up the people who are hitting you and following you, because they're using your Bluetooth to track you down. And so I have over like 50 IP address today. I was in the $5 store. And all of a sudden, I start getting hit. I say, oh, let me pull out my Bluetooth. And sure enough, it's like 5 people in there. And so I said, oh, my God, I got hit like 3 times. And it was like 5 people was connected to my Bluetooth device. Now, mind you, it's over like 30-something people in the store. So I left out of there and went and walked purposely walk next door to the front of your store to see, like, okay, if this, you know, this, like, suspicious thing, this person came following me again. And that same one of the persons that was on at the $5 store ended up in the Bluetooth and in the store at the front of your store. So I get out the store. I call Sprint, and I confirmed last week with Sprint. I said, I need to ask you something. If I put my Bluetooth on and walked in the store and you turned your Bluetooth on, would my device would be able to connect with yours? He said, no, ma'am, there's no way to do that now unless you intentionally connect with my device, I intentionally connect with your device. I say, so what you're saying is if someone, a lot of Bluetooth IP numbers is in my Bluetooth device or my phone, they did it illegal? He said, yes, they did. And so it's nothing like a Wi-Fi. It's not like Wi-Fi, how you turn on your laptop and you see all the services available. He said they had intentionally logged into your Bluetooth and let you know. Like he said, they got you. He said they got a hold to your device some kind of way. And my thing is, it could be somebody who authorized them and passed my number out within my community. You know?
Absolutely.
And so I said, okay, I know where they congregate at, right, which is the 7-Eleven parking lot. I drove over there, and I just pushed my Bluetooth, and what I noticed is they started getting in their trucks and their cars, leaving up out of there. I mean, scattering like roaches. But I did, my Bluetooth was able to get two of them. So I talked to a digital forensic guy yesterday. And so he said, he asked me a couple questions. He said, I'm just going to do a consultation on you because whoever these people are, somebody then got my bank account, a debit card, and they charged a Home Depot item. I called, I got this information. I didn't know this. I happened to go to my bank to deposit some money, and I asked, I said, I just want to know, you know, can you give me a rundown of the things I purchased? And I saw that. And so I said, Home Depot, I don't shop at Home Depot no other than get some spray paint. And so I ended up taking that to the police department. So while I was yet walking through the police department and in the parking lot, people's IP number, they followed me.
Wow.
They're all in my phone.
Wow.
Yes.
Kim,
so the forensic guy I talked
Kim,
to yesterday.
Kim, before you go on, I got to cut you off because, but I'm going to have you back so you could tell us more of this because I know your story. You sent me the videos and everything, and I'm really excited about that. But listen, I got to cut you off now, but listen, let's talk soon, and I'm going to get you back on as soon as possible. As soon as we have an opening, I'm going to definitely send you in. And listen, Sabrina, thank you so much for verifying most of the stuff that was happening. I really, really appreciate that. And I want to thank both of y'all. And let's talk during the week. On that note.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Now, on that note, I got to bring in my good friend all the way from sunny California, who I haven't spoke with for a couple of years now, Miss Denise Johnson. I think that is the correct. Denise, are you there? Talk to me.
Yes, I'm here, Reverend Pinkney. It's so
How
good to talk to you again.
Absolutely, absolutely. I feel so good just talking to you. I was so happy to be able to be reconnected with you. I'm really excited, and I know you got something that you want us to know. Talk to us about what is going on as of now. First, tell the story about your son, if you don't mind. And if you could do that, then let's go into something else. Because you got 10 good minutes to talk to me.
Okay. Thank you, Reverend Pinkney, and thank you again for remembering me, because I know you have a lot on your plate, and you've done a lot, and I recognize you as a hero for what you've been through, because you've been through the fire, and you've come out pure gold. Reverend Pinkney, as you remember, my son, Gregory Johnson Jr., was murdered November 22nd, 2008, in the Sigma Chi Fraternity House at San Jose State University in San Jose, California. He was a junior. They always seem to mistake the fact that he was well on his way to graduating. His major was kinesiology, and he had a minor in political science. He was well on his way to graduating, doing very well. He was a personal trainer at Bali's, which is near the campus. And he was just happy, doing well. I talked to him 4 or 5 days before he was murdered. This was after President Obama became president, and I asked him, did he want to come home? Because we were told at church not even to be out at night if we were black.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were people that, you know, hated the fact that we had a black president and would take it out on us, you know. So I called him and asked him, you know, are you okay? Do you need me to come pick you up? And he felt like he was safe, as I felt, except for the fact that Obama had been elected president. I was completely in the dark about fraternities and what goes on and what have you. As I said, Gregory had been in this fraternity for 2 years. He stayed the first year he was there. He lived at Joe West Hall, who had a racial incident after he died with Donald Williams. I really did not want him to move into the house, because when I went there, I just didn't get a good feeling. And at any rate, on November 22nd, about 9:30 p.m., there were two squad cars pulled up to my house, out in front of my house. Officer Stuhler came in, knocked on the door, came in, and I was in the back, and he told my husband that my child was dead, that he had hung himself in the fraternity house. Well, I was in the back, and my husband started screaming, and I came to the front, and I was hearing what he was saying as I was coming into the front room, and I collapsed. I collapsed, and I sat there. My husband, I went into stupor. I just couldn't believe it. I thought, well, they have to have made a mistake. They're not talking about my child.
Yeah.
I mean, I just sent him to school. You know, I just talked to him, and he was fine. And the officer handed me a card, one of his cards, and it had the number to the Santa Clara County Coroner's Office. While he was there, still standing there with his hand on his gun, I called the coroner's office and asked them, could I come and see my son, identify his body. They told, Claudine told me that that the fraternity brothers had identified him already, his brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't come down. So I called my son, and I asked him to call. And I said, well, I don't know, my mind was just racing. I was racing, and I just didn't know what to think, Reverend Pinkney. And I called my son and asked him to go down and identify his brother's body, because he lived closer to San Jose than I did. My drive was a 3.5-hour drive. His was like 30 minutes.
Okay.
And they told him, the same woman told him the same thing, and he said, well, I'm coming anyway, because that's my baby brother, and I want to know what happened to him. And because by the time I got to talking to my son, I was bordering on hysteria. And the woman told him if they came down, him and his wife, if they came down, they weren't going to be let in, and that there would be detectives outside. So they were insistent on us not being able to see intentionally labeled suicide. They were calling that a suicide. And I knew then, okay, I knew from the very beginning my child didn't kill herself. As I said, I thought they had a mistake. They had the wrong child.
Uh-huh.
But when they said that, I knew it wasn't no suicide. That's not protocol. They follow no protocol whatsoever. The next day we went there, we talked with Andre Barnes, the police chief, and he told us, this was a Monday, he told us that he was killed on Saturday. This was Sunday, I'm sorry, the next day was a Sunday. No, this was a Monday because we went into his office, and he wasn't in the office on a Monday. We went into his office Monday. The whole family that Sunday went down to the house, the fraternity house. You could smell pine sol when you hit the door. Mm. You could recognize the pine sol smell, which I'd been there. I used to go, Reverend Pinckney, my husband and I used to go down almost every month for the 2 years, for the first 2 years that he was there. Okay, and we take him grocery shopping, what have you. I never smelled pine sol. You know, it was a fraternity house.
Right.
And I could smell it that day.
They don't clean like that, no way. They don't clean like that in a fraternity house.
No. No. No, that's what I'm saying. It was never like that. And when we got up into his bedroom, the house was full of boys when we got there. There were 33 boys living in that house.
Uh-huh.
When we got there, the house was full of people. They had a squad car sitting in the driveway of the fraternity house, and it said Riot Squad.
Mm-hmm.
They had a placard there, Riot Squad.
Mm.
It came because my family came all night long. My son got here. My in-laws came from L.A., you know, and we were ready to go to head out by 10 o'clock that morning. So we got there about 10 o'clock, I'm not sure of the time. But they were cleaning. They had his stuff packed, and there was a mattress sitting to the side of the bed. It was not on the bed, which I noticed. There was no mattress on the bed. They had his things packed. There was supposed to be a houseman who was an adult teacher that was supposed to be in charge of management of the house. He was there. And there was one other parent besides us, one of his fraternity, and I'm putting that loosely, brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't kill your brother and lie.
That's right.
Or
Absolutely.
Watch your brother get ill and then lie about it. You don't do that's not a brother. Michael Lawrence, his father was there with him. He was the only other parent that was there in the house. And I noted that. I talked to the Detective Wong outside, and I told him somebody's made a mistake. I said, my son did not kill himself.
Uh-huh.
Something's wrong, you know.
Yeah.
And he kind of smirked and said, well, he owed $4,000 in student loans. So kids, a lot of times when they owe money, that was a lot of money to him, $4,000.
Uh-huh.
That was worth somebody's life. And I told him, I said, my son came to that school. He was a scholar when he came there. Okay, he was in the academic triathlon before he left the school that he was in Laurel Lake High School, California. This child was a licensed ordained minister. He started preaching when he was 6 years old.
Mm.
He understood life and he understood death. He understood a whole lot more than a lot of us adults do. He was in that fraternity, and he used to counsel other students because he had such a good head on his shoulder, you know, and he had a connection that other people didn't understand. Because, you know, a lot of us, we go to church and we don't understand the spirit world, but the spirit
That's
world
right.
is real, you know. So this child had no reason. He was making A's and B's in kinesiology. He was tutoring other children, other fellow classmates, and working as a personal trainer at Bally's. So, no, he did not have any, no, he didn't have any mental problems. He was doing everything that he should have done. It took me 13 days to get his body to the funeral home here. Okay? The coroner suggested, because we did not have the money, the coroner suggested that or implied that they could cremate him there. Well, mm-hmm. I certainly wasn't going to do that.
Right.
So we raised the money and we brought him home. I dressed him. The Lord gave him to me. I brought him into this world, blessed. He was blessed from the minute. He never gave me a minute of trouble. I said, I brought him in here, and I'm going to dress him when he leaves. And that's why I went down there, and I'm going to examine. We took cameras. I told my husband, bring some cameras. We're going to take pictures of every inch of his body because somebody's telling a lie.
Mm.
And that's what we did. And during that time, I found a 6-inch crack, a crack, not a scar. It's been mentioned as a scar and other abrasion, all kinds of crazy things in the newspaper. But it was a crack. I saw his skull shift.
Mm.
Okay. I've been in the medical field for a long time. I know the difference between a scar and a crack. When his skull shifted, there was matter oozing. And I don't know, I thought it was brain matter. I don't know what it was, but it was some white stuff oozing out of the back of his head. And he had a square block. His head was resting on a block. When I removed the block, his head fell backwards into my hand. And that said to me his head was not attached to his spinal column.
Wow. And how tall was he?
My son was 6 foot. At the time, he was 6'4". Okay, mm-hmm. They mentioned in the newspaper, which they get stuff wrong. He was 6'4", and he weighed about 210 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
The room that they claimed, they took me down into a room and claimed he hung himself. That room, I had to bend over, okay? The room was 5'10". I could reach the pipe, the main sewage pipe that's in the ceiling. I could reach, touch it with my hand. And I'm five foot five, a little over 5'5". Mm-hmm. And I could reach up and touch this pipe. This is how low the ceiling was. They claimed that they found him. One of his roommates, Mike Lawrence, and there was another, Brendan Cruz, they claimed that they found him on his knees hanging. And then another one of them said his legs were out in front of him, and his behind was about an inch from the ground. And then he was hanging from a 14-gauge orange heavy-duty electrical extension cord. My son didn't have a mark on his neck, not a bruise. There were no, the coroner's report claimed that he had ligature marks. He had no ligature marks. They're lying. His neck was damaged. That was from the blow to the back of his head. From what I can tell, they hit him in the back of his head, and then they made sure he was dead. They hit him in his neck, and that killed him instantly, cut off all his vital functions. Where he might have lived, he may have lived with a cracked skull. He may have been paralyzed. But when they disconnected his head from his spinal column, that was a coup de grace.
Wow.
And they called this okay. The NAACP came in local. It went all the way to Washington D.C. Okay. The FBI, Alex Cobazant was the FBI agent on the case. He told me that they were going to investigate the case as a hate crime and that he would probably come up here to get more information from me, you know, and I would probably meet him somewhere and he would get more information from me. Mm-hmm. Well, this never happened. They did investigate my son's case as a hate crime. okay, because it was reported to them by the NAACP as a hate crime, a possible hate
crime. Okay.
And they had Alex Cobazant, was the last time I talked to him. He never came up and got more information or anything, but the last time I talked to him, he had told me there was it was a 300-page report with pictures, with CDs that we never got from the coroner's office. The coroner's office would never release anything like that. They released a put together so-called was supposed to be an autopsy, might be. Okay. And it was redacted. And then the campus police gave me a 63-page redacted police report. Okay. The FBI told me they could not give me the 300-page report and the pictures and the CDs because it was a matter of national security.
Wow. That's odd. Wow.
That's what I was told.
Hmm.
So here we sit 12 years later. I still have no pictures. The pictures that I have the back of my son's head, I took them at myself at the funeral home because I knew they were lying.
Absolutely.
He had a crack in the back of his head. They never addressed it. The police department never addressed it. The San Jose Police City Police Department was there. They said they weren't.
Wow.
So because when you leave cancer to fester, because there's definitely a hate crime problem at that school, at San Jose State University, there has been many black, other black and brown students as well as citizens that have been killed at that university. And the university itself covered it up.
Yes.
The police covered it up. The campus police covered it up. The coroner covers it up. It's never been addressed. So consequently, the last few years, you've had nothing but racial incidents at that school. And it's been in, on the news. It's been in newspapers. Because the problem does not just go away.
No.
The problem has to be looked at. Cancer has to be dealt with. So that cancer is still there eating away at those students. And someone found out what happened because this is the time we live in, according to the scriptures, where information will be going here and there, to and fro. And somebody found out. And when those students found out that they actually covered up the murder of a scholar, a child that was, they always have our children, hanging on street corners, and that's it. But when they want to do something with their lives or do something exceptional, you know, they're crazy.
Yes.
Oh, he had to have done this. Okay, I can understand. You know what? I can understand anybody living in this system having a problem with nervousness or whatever else when they get home. But I know for a personal fact, I know prayer changes things. But for those who do not believe, okay, who do not believe, now, there are people, everybody doesn't commit suicide. Our children are not committing suicide. And they're playing the same game over and over and over and over again.
That's right.
And it's not being addressed because it hasn't been addressed in the past. And your past will come back and haunt you.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will. Ms. Johnson, you know that I always stood with you and always will stand with you. And I really, really, really wish that we could have got better closure for you. I know how difficult it is, especially when they doing their thing. And they don't love us enough. You know, they don't love us enough. Matter of fact, they would do anything to protect their own. But, Ms. Johnson, I want you to know I'm with you. I stand with you. I always have stood with you. And I would love for you to come back on and talk more about this. And you have an opportunity to come on every week and say something, you know, even if it's just a few words, if it's just going to relieve some of that pain, because I know it's how difficult this is. I never had a child to get murdered or anything like that, but I'm with you 100%, Ms. Johnson, and I want you to know that. I stand with you 100%, and I know how difficult this is, but I want you to let you know that me and my wife, we both love you very much, and we'll be praying for you. Anything you want
Thank
to say
you.
For the last words or something? Because you got, you know, I got another minute or so for you to say something, and then I got to bring on my next guest, Gwen. And we can take over there, but you always welcome to come on. You're even welcome to call me at times. Let's talk and see where we at. So
tell us
what you want. You know, if you could take it limited to about 90 seconds, tell us what you want us to know and how we can help you if we can.
Okay, we have a petition that is out there, justiceforgregoryjohnsonjr.com, and it's on change.org. And Gregory Johnson Jr., his website is whokilledgregoryjohnsonjr.com. And we need you to sign, please, please, please sign the petition. And we're trying to get his case looked at again, reopened, because they threw it out. They said that the only reason they threw it out is because of the statute of limitations. Well, I filed everything that I could in order. Because another thing that I did before the statute was up was go to the independent auditor, LaDoris Cordell, who was supposed to help find the corruption and who basically did nothing but tell me who was there.
Wow.
Okay. So we need you to sign that petition. We need you to call the president of the university and ask her to be involved in the reopening of Gregory Johnson Jr.'s case, because they're still fighting racism. There's nothing but racism and hatred in the Silicon Valley. Okay, there's racism and hatred down there, and they're not addressing it. That's why they're sweeping it under the rug. I guess hoping that maybe they can kill off all the blacks and all the Latinos, and I guess they'll just be there. I don't know what they're thinking. But we need you to put pressure on that president, put pressure on Becerra, the state's attorney here in California. And they're well aware of what happened. That state, and so is the Black Caucus in Washington, D.C. Because it's been 12 years, a lot of them have moved on. But they all knew. Eric Holder knew. This is nothing new. Lynching has been going on for hundreds of years. Hundreds of years.
Absolutely.
And that's what they did. They cracked his skull and broke his neck, and it was a lynching. That's what
it
was. It was a lynching. Oh, yes, it was.
Absolutely. Ms. Johnson, can you send me that link for to sign the petition? Let me send it out to the people. And also,
I sure will.
Send me as much information as you can, and let's talk. Let's you and I talk and see where we at and what, you know. I know it's been a little while, but let's talk and see what we can do. Maybe we can do something. And listen.
I will.
All right, Ms. Johnson. Always good to talk to you. Let's talk. All right. That was my good friend, Ms. Johnson. Her son was murdered at San Jose State, and wow, it's unfortunate. Wow, what a story. But we got to stay strong. You know, we got to learn to fight together. If we don't fight together, they'll wipe us out. But on this note, I got to bring in my good friend, Gwen, former teacher. She was received a Teacher of the Year Award. She's been the head of 17 different organizations for the city of Detroit. She's just a remarkable person, and then I'll let her tell you about her. Gwen, are you there? Talk to me.
Yes, I'm here, Reverend Pickney. How you doing?
That was the story that the
lady who was just on.
Yes.
It really broke my heart. So so many people in the same situation. And really, you just scream for justice inside. And it's like you're screaming all the time. Where is it?
Yeah, absolutely.
But
and, you know, the sad part is, Gwen, that, you know, people don't come together unless it's their family. Then they want you to drop everything you're doing and help them. We, if it's your family, my family, or the people around the corner, we need to make sure that we come together, because there's strength in numbers. Absolutely.
Right.
But
right.
Absolutely. And we got to learn that. You coming on?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
How much time do I have, Rev?
You got 10 minutes.
Okay. My purpose on being on the show, or for being on the show, is to explain to people some of the things you go through as a targeted individual, and the description Kim gave was very, very true to form as to what people go through. But then we can't look past all the attacks to what's happening to the people as a person, to her as a person. Her life is disrupted. My whole life is disrupted by these people who get a kick out of doing this. And it's almost like the Bible says we're in a spiritual war, fighting against evil from diverse places. These people are so evil to you can't even imagine it. And I don't have any statistics. I'm sure you do, on the number of people they've harmed or murdered. But I did watch a video of some of the testimonies of people who had gone through this. But as a person, and when I was listening to Kim, and I think of myself, the money you spend out just to stay alive, I mean, the money you have to spend out for devices to check to see if you're being spied on, or to pay people to help you, to leave your home, and just the whole, every aspect of your life is disrupted by this. Started out being a targeted person when I worked for the citizens of Detroit as the chairperson of the Rush Park Citizens District Council and the coordinating council. Now, initially it started out with people doing stuff that you really can't put your fingers on. For example, one time they always go through your friends. That's who they go through to get to you, your family or your friends. But that's been my experience. And I was poisoned a couple of times, but thank God I was able to get over that. But after the manager came in for the city of Detroit, they eliminated the citizens district councils. Well, I was over the 17 neighborhoods in the city of Detroit, including the Fresh Park CDC. And we were responsible for ensuring that the people's rights were protected, their human rights, their property rights, their civil rights. They had equal access to the benefits of urban renewal, meaning they could get their roofs, their houses fixed, their neighborhoods fixed, and institutions built that met their needs or consistent with what they wanted. And then we were also responsible for an integral part of it, which was the billions of dollars that were coming in for urban renewal of these 17 urban renewal areas to ensure that there was accountability for the spending of it. And what I did, which was my job, I wasn't a regular citizen, I was elected to do it, is I called people out for not doing their job. And they didn't like that, so I ended up having to file a lawsuit against them. And then that was the beginning of the terror that I've experienced. But these people don't want you alive. But if they really want to kill you, they can just walk up and kill you. But what they do is they try to harm you in ways that it looks like you just got sick or you killed yourself or you're crazy or something like that. So like Kim, I've experienced the sharp pain, and I believe they're connected to electricity. I believe they're connected to the phones, the TVs, wiring around you, even those monitors that they have on your house for your utility bills when you hear them running and things like that, because I've seen changes in my body when some of those things come on or when I disconnect them. And my message to people, too, is if you're a target individual and you have those that extreme Wi-Fi extremes with the number of gigabytes you have or whatever they call them, 5Gs on your phone, then if you start feeling pain and feeling like you're being exposed to something like radiation, then take those things and turn them off, and you will notice that they will disappear or you'll see a market difference. But with targeted individuals like me some others, it might be a little bit more serious. I haven't been able to stay anywhere. Everywhere I go, they find me. I think they find me before I move in and doctor up the apartment. And I've had people and police point out where they had little pinholes that you just think it's a little hole in the wall, but it's for surveillance. They put stuff in my lights, and they put lights in that are cameras. They put stuff in my smoke detector. And when I left out of one of my apartments to go watch my grandkids, they pulled the smoke detector down, but I got back too fast, and it was bad news for them because they just left the smoke detector hanging in the kitchen, in the refrigerator door. You wouldn't even imagine things could be there. But they put them various places in your house. It's good if you could go to the spy shop and buy a detector, or if you know someone with a detector. But the main thing for me has been to get out of their way because I want to stay alive. And I don't think that it's healthy to be exposed to lasers and radiation and that pain, because who knows what's happening when you're having the pain. I don't know all the details of the effects physically on you, but I know that it has made some differences with me. One of my arms was burnt real bad. I know that I had a knee problem in one apartment. And it was like the people above me were putting radiation on my knees. They were burning and turning red and hot. But the key to it is they try to deprive you of sleep. The number one thing they do, and this is a war tactic, and the people who do this are experts. And with me, they put this radiation or whatever, it's like something like if you get tased, but you get tased with radiation. That's how it feels. You can feel it when it happens to you, and sometimes it can knock you off of. One time it knocked me off the couch. That's how hard it was, and it'll stun you like maybe a taser. So I just want to pass the information on, and I also want to say that do not, if you think that you're being targeted and that things are happening to you when you're asleep, do not think that when you fall asleep that you'll be all right, because you won't. But the main thing is they do things to deprive you of sleep, so when you sleep, you sleep hard. And that's how these people are getting all this damage and these cuts and their skin bruised and burnt, because once they fall asleep, then they put the lasers on them. So that's basically it, unless you have any questions for us.
One of the things I know that you know that you was the teacher of the year you was the, you know, you have a master's degree and that, you know, you're well read in most things you do. And what I want to tell you, it doesn't make a difference how much education you have, you know, when, you know, you're expendable to this government. This is what people don't realize, that they're targeting certain people and all of us. You know, when I think about Ms. Johnson and her son, things that happened, and the thing is, we have to find a way where we can unite, because I think that's the secret, Gwen. I believe that there's strength in numbers, and I think that's how you fight. We have so many list people on. How can people listen on the computer? You know, they've been listening now for over an hour and a half almost of just us talking and stuff like that, because we're saying something that's interesting. You know, we have over 100,000 people listening. One week we had 200,000 people just listening. But we got to do more than just listening. We got to come together and fight this monster.
That's number one.
And then tell your friends. Yeah. Right. So listen, Gwen, if you want to say something, the last minute, I got to bring in my final guest after you. So if you got something you want to say, and you always welcome to come on and talk about it, because I believe that the more you talk about it, the more results we'll get. We'll find a way that way so you can educate other people who walk around and believe that this has not happened, especially your family members. It's crucial that your family members listen to a show like this, because that way they can't run to them and say that you're nuts, you're crazy, that stuff is not happening, but it's happening all over the world. And I tell you, the thing that happened in Iraq or that Kuwait, whatever, with the Iraqi army, that blew my mind, because I could not believe that something like that could ever happen. Not like that. But anyway, you got something you want to say, spit it out, and then I got to move on.
Okay, I'd just like to say that most people in Detroit know that I have been fighting for my house for a long time. They've been trying to steal it. And finally they did steal it. And me, who have all kind of awards for working with the homeless, thought I knew homeless people and how it felt better than anybody homeless. But now that I am homeless, I really know how it feels. And with me and with anybody else, if you have land, which I have, when they stole my house, they thought they got my lot too. And then I said no. And then they want to try to steal the lot. I mean, they already got the house. The lot's next to the house. I parked my camper on my own lot. They put all kind of graffiti over my camper just because I parked it on my lot, and they're trying to take it. The next thing they did is they had police give me tickets. I had to pay $500. And thanks to Jerry Goldberg and his help, he's an attorney. Oops. But anyway, one of the local attorneys kind of walked me through what I should do next related to those tickets. But because of the COVID, you know, I had to go and pay the tickets to keep my license, $500 for illegal tickets for parking on my own property. But it's always land and money. Those are the bottom line factors when it comes to harassment, threats, and all this other kind of stuff. And I am so blessed to have good friends like yourself and to know God. Because several of my board members got murdered. A lot of people got murdered in my neighborhood, but God has continued to let me live. And I thank him for that. And I thank all the people, not only from Detroit, but all over the country that have come in my life to help me through this process.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. Thank you so much, Gwen. I love you, and
okay,
I want you to make sure
you. You
if you ever need me, you know I'm here for you. So take care of yourself, and I got my good friend Amy coming on next, and she's the one. She sent me some pictures of her. Oh, I just can't believe these pictures, you know, how she's been burned. I can't believe it. And, you know, to me, it was like, I know she need our help, and we got to figure out a way how to help her. So let me go to Amy and bring her in, and she's going to close out the show herself and tell us what she wants to know. Amy is one of the strongest fighters. She has a lot of information, and she's been fighting this for a long time. But she go to the city council and deal and get information, you know, have them to sign on, which is such a beautiful thing. But I tell you, those pictures that Amy sent me almost had me in tears. I could not believe what I was looking at. Amy, are you there? Talk to me.
Yes, I am. I want you to bring in Gloria Wellburn at the same time because she is going to support what I'm about to tell everybody. I want you to connect me up with Mrs. Johnson because Mrs. Johnson play a key role in me helping her and she helping me. This is a federal government conspiracy and entrapment that they're trying to hide. This mind control is the fertile grounds is the Sigma Chi's. And I repeat, the United States government, the corporate Americans have went rogue. They are operating this cybernetic technology called mind control. It is traced to MK Ultra. It is microwave technologies where you're frying on the bodies of people. You can fry on them where they can know about it, or they can feel the stimulation, or they do not feel the stimulation. It is a slow cooked death, and I need all of the listeners, viewers around the world to step in and step up on my behalf. I'm getting ready to put the pictures on T-shirts. I'm going to be marketing the T-shirt. I'm going to let Gloria Wellburn talk to you, and I want Reverend Pinckney to describe what my pictures look like, and the perpetrator name is Jonah Rosinski Montranga. It started over a computer glitch, and anybody else in their right mind will investigate when somebody is doing some strange electronic harassment in their environment, where they taking over their computers, taking over their radios, taking over their watch machines, taking over any electronic device and using refrigeration to channel into their body and using the electrical outlet of the electrical antenna that's connected to the electrical grid of the smart meters to the cell phone towers, to the space-based weapon, and to the global position satellites in space, to the sea-based technology called sonar technology. And anybody know about military terms, they know I'm speaking the right terms. This is millimeter microwave technology that's channeled into my body and taking residence in my body, where I cannot just remove it without the perpetrator being convicted and put to death. I repeat that my perpetrators have to be put to death in order for me to live. This is a life or death situation. This has something to do with you kill me, or I'm going to have to legally have you killed by law. Because Jonah R. Montranga is a Rockefeller and a Rothschild bloodline member. And he feels as though, because his family is the national bankers, that he cannot be touched because he has somebody at the Nation of Islam on his payroll, and it had links to a bank scams, homes being sold, and took him from my family and other family members, and taking their home loans and selling them on the exact vital records of date of birth they was born to. I did an investigation. It's so deep with these individuals. It's traced to Hollywood entertainment industry, Busta Rhymes, Naomi Campbell, Mary J. Blige, Jay-Z, J Electronica, all of the black entertainers, including Foxy Brown. All of these people, I could trace them by their vital records to the conspiracy of the dates that Jonah R. Montranga had them on his payroll. His mother is a Rockefeller, and his father must be, she must have married Montranga, whoever that person is. That Jonah R. Montranga mother is a direct a bloodline member of the Rockefellers, and I traced their vital records to my family's vital records and to my family's bloodline vital records, and saw that they was forcing us to breed to their vital records, and we forced to breed to their vital records. And from that being the case, and it could be proven, I had discovered that they needed the vital records to log on these computers with laboratories of scientists, laboratories, you exploiting your DNA and finding out how to exploit your DNA over computer science and hack into your brain. That is cybernetics. And my body looked like a 70-year-old woman's body when my face looked like I'm about probably 30 years old. You can see that these people did this to me too, as a punishment, after they arranged that the House resolution be on Malcolm X's date of birth, May 19, 2015. They had that date designated for the date. Then the next date, they had my son's father's family's estate sold the very next date. Then I traced that back to the Nation of Islam, to the mosque in Richmond, California, where they had lured me to. I traced that to the date that property was sold to them. I mean, information about the property of the house, the property was sold, the commercial building was sold 10/2/1990 to the person that the Nation of Islam had lured me over there to the property. Why is it important? Because that property connects to the property that Jonah or Matranga live in on the same date, but 6 years difference. 10/2/1990, 10/2/1996, that traced it to the exact date they killed my son's grandmother. They killed her to the day. They do these rituals and kill you on days of their vital records or a home loan or something that's tangible and that they need to have a backtrack or date that they can backtrack on as a correlated and repetitive date that they done committed a criminal and heinous act against you and your family. And what I did was I traced down their criminal activities through all public records. And so, and what I did was I started with the criminal records, crimes that people supposed to have committed that had them placed in prison. All that correlated with the home loans. It correlated with the cybernetics. It correlated back to my ancestors' vital records. It correlated back to all people's vital records. So I'm saying that they have our vital records a part of this cybernetics. Now, go ahead, Glo. You tell them what else I trace and how they have my body. I throw up. They can make me throw up. They can attack my breathing. They can turn my neck. They can turn my eyeballs. They can treat me like a robot. I'm tired of these people tormenting me. I need your help. Somebody at the Nation of Islam is attacking me, too. I want you to know it's somebody in high places. I'm not ready to reveal who it is, but I'll tell you it has something to do with Khalid Muhammad, death, and it has something to do with Malcolm X's death, and I'll leave it like that. Go ahead,
all
Gloria
right.
Wellburn, please.
Gloria, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Gloria. Reverend Pinkney.
Okay,
I'm
I
here.
Thought we had lost you. All right.
Nah.
Talk to me.
Okay. I've been following Amy for the last 10 years with this information. And I'm not going to tell you that every time she said something, I was like, okay, I know, because I didn't. But I would ask, break it down. So now, listening to her, I have discovered that what she is saying is their birth date, their vital record, is what they are using as a signature. Instead of them writing their name, a birth date comes up, as if they had signed it. Are you understanding me?
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
Yes. So this is what's going on. And now Amy is to the point that my heart, I cried when I saw her pictures. but she's willing to have her picture printed on a T-shirt. And we would like, it would be part of a fundraiser for us because we would like to have a conference and bring all of this out and, you know, get everyone across the nation to wear a T-shirt, you know, Save Amy Anderson, and we'll put your number on it. You know, for more information, listen on Sunday, 5 p.m. But in the meantime, I heard Mrs. Johnson speak of the Black Caucus, and we too feel the same exact way, because I spoke to Al Sharpton face to face in 2009 when this first happened to me. I was so frightened, but I made my way into North Philly and found him at a little church where he was speaking. Oh, I'll call you on Monday. And nothing has ever been said. I said, they know everything about everything, but they know nothing about what thousands of people in the United States are going through. I don't get
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I think we have to start calling out everyone. Thank you for listening.
And thank you so much. And I got good news and bad news. The good news, I really appreciate everybody calling in. I think it was an excellent show. And Ms. Johnson, I want to make sure that you and I do not lose connection at this time. And Ms. Thomas, Kim, and everybody, Gwen and Amy, this is what I like. But unfortunately, we have just ran out of time. See you all next week, same time, same station.